A4.
Number 25B.
All right, we can take mind and say to ourselves, what are unchangeable identities of being in mind? And perhaps we could say it is the law of mind, because the law is unchangeable. We cannot change a law of isness. So, in a way, I think we could say it's the law of mind. What does it mean? It means that the method of the practitioner is to stay with what he has understood in the second column, to stay with that as a law of mind, and therefore not to be influenced by other informations. Anything that tries to disprove his understanding of truth and mind should be rejected as being not a law of mind. So he can see what he has seen in truth and mind is the law to the situation, and he sticks to that law, because a law is always a law. Or, from the point of view of spirit, we could see that that which is unchangeable in that treatment is that we see that this treatment is the only substance that is at work. The only substance at work, in other words, that there is no dualism, you see, which means that in our understanding we are unchangeable in our attitude, that only that what I have seen in truth is the only substance, the only reality, and that therefore matter cannot overthrow that understanding. Therefore that matter, food, air, and things like that that come in a treatment cannot overthrow the spiritual understanding. Or if we can see from the point of view of soul, I would see that which is and remains untouchable, unchangeable, is really, I would say, the supremacy of soul. The moment you see the whole treatment you have given as being supreme over the whole world, then the world can no more change it. So perhaps we get the sense of supremacy of the rules of soul. So here we would see in our treatment that whatever the influences are from the side of the five physical senses, from sufferings, from pains, and so on, that these would not be able to change in any way and shape and form that what we have been seeing in the second column as truth and mind. That it is so supreme, that's the rule of soul, that I see that what I have seen spiritually in the second column is now supreme over all the attacks of the testament of the physical senses. And that therefore I can rise above all the consciousness of the five physical senses, that I can disagree with all the false testimonies of the physical senses, that I can contradict all these influences, that I do not to have to agree with all the other meanings and opinions. See, I can use all those laws that say I'm not going to get involved into any other argument. I keep my understanding of truth and mind far above all the testimony of contradictory influences. Or I could see in principle that actually this, what I have seen, is the government of principle. It's really the government of the omnipotent principle. It's a big subject here, you know. Our inward attitude, which says in the second column, sorry that I always have to come back to it, but I must make it clear and you see what goes on. In the second column of knowing the truth, and if I know the truth and I've built up that knowing of the truth through the 7 times 7, that then within my consciousness I say, and this is the omnipotent principle. This is the omniscient principle. And this really governs every case. So that I am not in the least shaken by any human theory, by medical theories and things like that, that say, but the surrounding of the patient can rule the patient, that the stars and the moons can rule the patient, that ancient beliefs can govern the patient, but that I'm sticking right through unwaveringly to the facts of being, life and soul, that only the principle of being is governing. What is the principle of being? That what I have seen in my treatment, that's the principle, that governs, that understanding of being governs. Or I come to life, I can see that which makes my treatment unshakable is really to see that life is self-sustaining. And so I can say it's a self-sustaining life. It's terrific. Can you see? You go back to your second column, you have built up your treatment and your understanding of what is the truth, and then come in all kind of destructive influences. And the belief of destruction, of death, of lack, and so on may come in. And all what we have to do in order to see that what I have given as a treatment cannot be destroyed is to see that treatment has within itself the method of life and soul, that it is absolutely untouchable. Because at the point of life, I see that life is self-sustaining, that it has within itself the power of self-maintenance, self-provision, self-sustenance, that being is being out of its own beingness. I don't have to give life and sustenance and maintenance to that treatment. That treatment has the nature of life and so is always constructive, and nothing destructive can touch it. So it's always a question of, can that which we have built up as our understanding of truth, can that be destroyed? Can that be touched? Can that be taken away? Can that be lost, you see? And so we have to go through these synonymous terms and see that each one of them has within itself a tone of self-sustenance. And so you can come to truth, where you feel that treatment you have given has really the form of truth, that form of truth which cannot be changed, that truth has an ideal, that ideal is actually the consciousness of truth itself. And the moment I begin to see that treatment is not my treatment, but is God's own treatment of himself, because I have only been contemplating truth, God, and so that God is unchangeable, life and love, that God is unchangeable. Therefore, the consciousness of God does no more change, and I always have the perfect form of being. And naturally with that I have touched the last point, namely the perfection of being, or the perfection of love, which tells me that treatment is perfect, and therefore my method, life and soul, is to see that nothing can prevent perfection. Nothing can prevent salvation. There is nothing in the whole universe that can prevent salvation, because there is only love, which is all, and there is nothing. And therefore, within my consciousness, I entertain that wonderful state of consciousness that sees perfection cannot be, hindered, cannot be prevented. There is no way of preventing salvation. No way. All right. So let's go to the fourth column and investigate for us in a deductive way what happens to the patient. What does this treatment that I have been depicting as being the practitioner's consciousness and state of being, what has that, what effect has that on the patient, or why does it affect the patient, or how does it affect the patient? Why is not the patient something way away and therefore untouched by the practitioner's consciousness? And so we have to reason this out through the seven synonymous terms and can see that the patient is touched by the same consciousness as the practitioner has because of one thing, because there is only one mind, because there is the science of mind. If it is only ordinary metaphysics, where actually in metaphysics you need thought transference, where thought has been transferred from the metaphysician's and mesmerist's thought to the patient's thought. Here in science we see it is possible that the patient is touched by the practitioner's consciousness because the practitioner dwells in the realm of mind, and that mind is the mind of all, and therefore there is but one mind, and therefore there is not the mind of the practitioner and the mind of the patient. There is just one mind, God. And that's why the patient can get healed. The healing process starts on that very fact that mind is the one mind and the all mind. Once we have that pivotal point which connects, so to say, practitioner and patient, we can see that all the other synonymous terms now work through that one mind. And so spirit comes along and says, all right, I'm spirit, I'm the creative order. I bring now order into the patient's mind and into the patient's situation, and so creates order in the place of disorder. But all over that common mind, the one mind, where the mind of the practitioner and the mind of the patient is that mind which is God. Then spirit can work through that one mind and say, I'm order, I bring order into a disordered situation. So it creates order. When it creates order, naturally I can see that through this order I come to the point of soul, namely that changes take place. So we have changes, reformation, yeah? You can put that down, you see? Can you see the logic of it? Once we have seen practitioner and patient are not practitioner's personal mind and patient's personal mind, that the practitioner has not been thinking with his mind, but has been contemplating the one mind, and that one mind is the mind of all, then through that mind, spirit says, I begin in a creative way to put order where there is disorder. And in order to do that, I have to change and change and change and change and reform. And so a reformation takes place in the body, in the patient, and does what? As principle? As principle it says, it reaches every part of the system, I would say. That I begin to see that principle, which is the principle of all ideas, is therefore reaching through mind, spirit, and soul every part of the divine system. And by reaching every part of the divine system, naturally life takes place. There is a renewal taking place. The renewal of life taking place. And if a renewal takes place, what do we get? Health. So we come to truth and have a sense of health. So health is re-established, actually. Health re-established. That's what it's called. The healing takes place. But you can see there is a whole process going on before that. And so, actually, you come to the point of love, where you see that every problem can find its solution. So, every problem solved. Now, so we have deduced, and I think you could see it quite clearly, from our consciousness of the synonymous term, structuring now our synonymous term for a specific case, namely practice. Practice is only one chapter out of the textbook, and therefore it's not the only structuring of the synonymous terms. And in this way we found the principle of practice, not an individual case. We have searched for the principle of practice through the seven synonymous terms. And now I can tell you what we have been doing, because I said I only tell you at the end what I have been doing. What we have been doing is that we went through those about 80 pages of the chapter on Christian Science Practice. That's what we have been doing. We named it with a bit different terms. We didn't take time for 80 pages. We reduced it, but we went along the structure of that chapter. That's how Mrs. Eddy has built up the chapter on practice. She first gives the first column and shows what makes a practitioner to be a practitioner and gives it through the seventh. Then she changes the subject and shows 7 times 7 what is meant by knowing the truth. And then she changed to the third, exactly there where I brought in that example of somebody sending a telegram. There she changes and shows how the practitioner has to stick to his understanding and not to be influenced by anything. Not to be influenced by the counterfeit of mind, by the counterfeit of spirit and soul and principle and life, truth and love, but to stick to the identities of being, life and soul. And then comes that passage of mental treatment illustrated. That's our fourth column, where she shows that we have to lift treatment out of argumentation into the science of mind, of the one mind, and then she shows how it works in the patient, bringing that one mind, and that one mind bringing order, and that order demanding reformation, changes, that reaches every part of the system, also of the bodily system, that it resuscitates the patient, and then comes the court case in truth, showing that health is re-established, reinstated, and at the end, that actually there is no hindrance to solving any problem. This is the chapter on practice. And that's what I wanted once to do, and to see that if we know really our fundamentals rightly, if we can structure our seven synonymous terms according to definite categories, that then we can understand first the textbook better, because then we can read the textbook as structure, no more as sentences. And further, that then we have the method of how we can, in a deductive way, be constantly creative in every situation. Yes, that's that. Thank you.